Tonight on Arena, McDowry Yates performs live from his debut album, Traditional Singing from Dublin, and Rosetta Cookie brings us through the programme for this year's Wexford Festival Opera. +51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena, and we're available to watch on rte.ie/arena. McDowry Yates is one of those artists associated with the resurgence of traditional singing in Dublin over the last number of years. A former member of the band Skipper Alley, he's one of the founding members of the monthly singing group at Smithfield's famous cobblestone pub, The Night Before Larry Got Stretched, named of course after the 18th century ballad. Other members of that collection, active singers like Lisa O'Neill and Lancome's Rady Pete and Ian Lynch, have all released many albums between them since the group started in 2012. But Traditional Singing from Dublin is the debut from McDowry Yates, and he's already smiling, looking over me, probably guessing what I'm going to ask you. Why did it take you so long to get to this album? Because you really have been one of the major driving forces, it has to be said, behind the singing collective.
Well, I appreciate that, Sean, and thanks very much for having me on. I've often said about traditional singing that a small bit of self-doubt goes a long way. It's not exactly a genre of music in which you kick the door open and you say, I have arrived. And in my case, I guess that self-doubt had grown a bit, stifling, and it had held me back a small bit. But I'm a few years older now, and these songs have had a bit of time to bed in, and I feel like I'm just about there.
Yeah, because it is interesting that you said that self-doubt thing. To what extent, you know, do giants that are standing on your shoulder or peering over your shoulder help that self-doubt to grow into a kind of a debilitating type of thing?
Yeah, well, I suppose, I mean, something that's been a sort of a back and forth force in my life is the weight of the tradition that you inherit. But actually, if you spend a bit of time in it, you'll realise they're some of the most encouraging people around, the living ones at least, and it's actually by spending a bit more time getting close to that tradition that I've been able to come out of my shell a small bit. But the weight of the past and your duty to bring it on to the future is something that's definitely, I won't say held me back, but it's gotten to this point.
It was a challenge that was there that you had to face in some way. You've done, one of the ways you've done it on this new album, I would suggest, is by pairing the songs right back to just the song, the lyric and little instrumental accompaniment, which is your guitar and your baron in with you this evening. You're going to sing the opening track on the album for us, Johnny, I Hardly Knew You. When I listened to this song today, I suddenly heard, yes, I'd heard these lyrics a million times, but I heard them in a different way. So I hope the listeners will have the same experience as I had.
While on the road to sweet Attie, haroo, haroo. While on the road to sweet Attie, haroo. While on the road to sweet Attie, a stick in me hand and a drop in me eye. A doleful damsel I heard cry, Johnny, I hardly knew ye. With their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo, haroo. Their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo. And with their guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew ye. Darling dear, you look so queer, Johnny, I hardly knew ye. Well, you haven't an arm, you haven't a leg, haroo, haroo. You haven't an arm, you haven't a leg, haroo. No, you haven't an arm, you haven't a leg. You're an armless, legless, chickenless egg. You'll have to be put in a bowl to beg, Johnny, I hardly knew ye. With their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo, haroo. Their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo. And with their guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew ye. Darling dear, you look so queer, Johnny, I hardly knew ye. And where are the eyes with which you smiled, haroo, haroo? And where are the eyes with which you smiled, haroo? And where are the eyes with which you smiled when my poor heart you first beguiled? Why did you skedaddle on me and the child? Johnny, I hardly knew ya. With their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo, haroo. Their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo. And with their guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew ya. Darling dear, you look so queer. Johnny, I hardly knew ya. Well, now they're rolling out the guns again, haroo, haroo. They're rolling out those guns again, haroo. Aye, they're rolling out the guns again, but they'll never take our sons again. No, they'll never take our sons again. Johnny, I'm swearing to ya. Oh, with their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo, haroo. Their guns and drums and drums and guns, haroo, haroo. With their guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew ya. Darling dear, you look so queer. Johnny, I hardly knew ya.
Johnny, I hardly knew you, performed there live in studio by MacDowry Yeats, and that the opening track from his new album, Traditional Singing in Dublin. It's the, I think it's about the third verse in when it says, you haven't an arm and you haven't a leg, armless, legless, chickenless egg. I mean, I had never heard those lyrics as clearly as that before. Where did you get your version of the song from?
Yeah,
MacDowry?
Well, I guess it's a song that's been, I suppose, interpreted by everyone you could name. But that particular version comes from a great Dublin singer called Frank Hart, who I'm sure your listeners would be familiar with. And it's funny, that particular verse really attracted me because the line that follows that one, you haven't an arm, you haven't a leg, you're an armless, legless, chickenless egg, you'll have to be put in a bowl to beg, which is a very strange and unusual line. But if anyone knows their Dublin history, you might remember a character named Billy in the Bowl or Billy in the Bell. And it seems that old copper bowls were a sort of medieval wheelchair for people with no legs. So the suggestion here is that this man is going to have no way to propel himself around, that he'll have to be put in a bowl and hurtle himself around that way. So it's dark stuff, but the song, I think, plays on the tragicomedy of the whole thing.
Absolutely. And then you get down to that final verse, they're rolling out the guns again, and you think, this is what a great folk song or ballad song does. It speaks as much today as it did when it was written, whenever, back in time.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think people sort of think of traditional music as a music of the past, but anybody who spends any time in and around it realise that not only are new songs being written all the time, but songs have an amazing way of coming in and out of relevance as history continues to repeat itself. And that's just one example of a song written well over 150 years ago, but speaks to a time we're living in right this minute.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, our hope that they'll never take our sons again seems as vain now as it did 150 years ago. However, across the songs on the album, you do dip into quite a tradition. Is there a very specific tradition? I know you're from East Wall in Dublin. The answer's going to be yes. But what is that very specific tradition to Dublin song?
Yeah, well, I guess you speak to people around the country, they might tell you that traditional music and traditional singing is a rural pursuit. But for any of my great singing friends in Dublin, you'll know that it's alive here as much as anywhere else. And There's an incredible lineage of singers that I've sort of learned songs from, some from recordings and some in person. Great older singers that attend, say, Angolan Traditional Singers Club. Singers who also frequent our session in the Cobblestone the night before Larry got stretched. I've always been fascinated by what songs people sing in an urban environment. Very often not songs from that environment, songs that have migrated in from the countryside because, as we know, Dublin is a melting pot of everywhere else, not just other countries, but other parts around the country. So I've always had a massive fascination with the songs that have been sung in and around Dublin and her streets.
And the session in the Cobblestone, it's the best named session in the world, the night before Larry got stretched. You can kind of, if you look at that in 2012, I know things were already moving in terms of this resurgence of contemporary traditional music, if I can use that term for it. But what kind of effect do you think that particular song session has had, not just on you, but on traditional music in general in this country?
Yeah, I'm reminded often of a quote by Dave Van Ronk, who was a contemporary of Bob Dylan, and he was asked sometime in the 1990s, like, did you know you guys were going to start a revolution? And he said, of course we did. We were 22. And in our case, I can't say we were anywhere near as ambitious as that. But around 2012, the average age of a singing session in Dublin was 65 or so. And while those sessions were massively welcoming to people like us, myself and a couple of people you might know, Ian Lynch from Langham, yeah, with Clinton from Landless, we just wanted a place that was ours, that we could sort of run our way. Now, it was always welcome to people from other places. And like I say, we'd love to take credit for this resurgence, but we were just in the right place at the right time. We facilitated a resurgence in singing. We didn't create it. But within a couple of months, there was standing room only, and it's been running for 12 years now, and there's no sign of stopping.
And, you know, it's a thing that struck me when listening to the album today. It really is one voice, which is often that shout that you hear at a session if there's too much noise going on. Not often the case, I would suggest, at the night before Larry got stretched. But the sparseness, which seems to be part of the resurgence of this new traditional style, it does demand that one voice. It demands a very clear, unfussy performance of traditional music.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think what a lot of people are asking, you know, what is it about this current crop of bands? We talk about Landless or Lancome or You Vagabonds. What is it about them that has made a difference? Because people have been playing traditional music for the last 50 years in between these revivals. If you ask me, it's the connection to, for lack of a better word, the real thing, right? Connection to the grassroots traditional music scene. All of the people that were involved in this session and helped to found it have a foot in the contemporary world, but also in the more stripped back traditional one. And by borrowing from both traditions, you just enrich everything that you do. It's very easy to stray from the path. And listen, maybe that's a good thing somewhere along the line. But I find the music that retains its richness as you add synthesizers and everything else is the music that comes from that deep well that's right there at the core. And yeah, I mean, Larry is a place where people often sing unaccompanied, people sing with guitars or whatever, but it's a place where the unaccompanied traditional singing world is given pride of place, though everything is welcome.
How did that feed in, you know, that kind of atmosphere of the one voice? How did that feed into the making of the record for you? Because to me, it sounds like you alone, almost in your, now, I'm not talking about the quality of the sound, in your bedroom, the sound is perfect on it, but that you're just singing these almost for yourself and we're getting a chance to eavesdrop.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm someone who sort of believes in creating a musical ground zero, as it were. Traditional singers will often begin to expand the audio range of what they do as they make a couple of albums. For me, I always knew that if I was ever going to do a first one, it would be like Liam Weldon's first record. It would be like Dick Ochen's first record. Stripped back, bare to the bones, just the songs as I learned them in pubs, kitchens, all that kind of bass, as they exist there. There's plenty of time for everything else. And I'm sure if I ever get around to making another record, it's only taken 12 years to make this one. I'll begin to dabble a small bit with more sounds. But this is the tradition that I come from. And it's the way the songs are in my natural habitat.
You can add on. It's hard to take away. It's easier to add a little bit on at a time. You mentioned Liam Weldon there. The Blue Tower Road, is his song is on the album. But one that really struck me was Our Last Hope from Dominic Behan. I remember it was a few years back since you were in, I think it was one of the first times we met, in fact, you were in talking about Brendan Behan on the programme. Our Last Hope is not the song I expected to hear from Dominic Behan.
Yeah, well, very often I think republicanism and republicans like Dominic Bean and like his brother Brendan are often not gifted or granted the nuance they deserve, right? Very often the sort of myriad of views are a bit like layers of an onion when you peel these people back a small bit. Dominic Bean is the writer of songs like Come Out Your Black and Tans and The Patriot Game, which I suppose to some seem like very one-note, blood-curdling republican songs. But if you look across his career, his views were much more interesting and unusual than that. In this song, Our Last Hope, which I'm not performing today, unfortunately, but Dominic, I suppose, plays with the mythology of the conflict in the north of Ireland and tries to find ways of taking these lyrics and turn them into something hopeful. So I'll give you an example. The start of the third verse is, God save the Queen, God bless the Pope with your harps and lambeg drums as you live in despair and die in hope in your Falls and Shankill slums. And I maintain that's the only time you'll hear God Save the Queen in an Irish traditional song. But I challenge anyone to find another one.
But there, what he is talking about there is, in fact, the connection between those working class areas. And he refers to Henry Joy McCracken as he goes back in history to look at his role, I suppose, in bringing the two communities together or being part of what might be considered a non-Republican community.
Well, yeah, I mean, a bit like traditional music, very often the most clear path for the future is in the past. I mean, in the last verse of that song, he says, let's say goodbye to my friends at last, to bigotry and hate. Our future's always been the past, not Stormont or Free State. There was a time when Catholics and Protestants on this island came together under a shared banner. And it wasn't that long ago in the scheme of things.
Yeah, well, I suppose we would hope that given the Good Friday Agreement that we might be heading in that direction of a single banner again of some kind. You're going to finish with... Not all the songs are political and not all the songs are, you know, very sparse and bleak. The Heron, I'm not quite sure what is going on in this song, but it's not as innocent as it sounds.
Yeah, best not to dig too deep for the sake of your listeners. This is a surreal little nonsense song of which there are hundreds of versions across these islands. You'll find some up and down the UK and England. This is one that I got from the great Dublin singer Barry Gleason, who's a fantastic performer and also, little known fact, he's the brother of Brendan, but not important.
I believe he's doing quite well.
Himself. They're a talented family, no doubt. And this is a song he sung back in the day, and it's just a bit of delightful nonsense. And when I heard it, I said, I'll need that.
And you have the bar on up for this particular one as well.
I do indeed.
There was a queer thing washed up in Malahide. It was 40 foot long, 40 foot wide. And they called it the Herdon that came in with the tide. Take it away and don't delay. On your leg, two, your leg, three, your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his head? But the grandest stale oven that ever baked bread with me herons and heads and oven-baked breads. Take it away and don't delay. On your leg, two, your leg, three, your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his eyes? But a lovely looking pair of blue butterflies with me herons and heads and oven-baked breads. Herons and eyes and blue butterflies. Take it away and don't delay. On your leg, two, your leg, three, your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his back? But a lovely little sailor, and we christened him Jack with me herons and heads and oven-baked breads. Herons and eyes and blue butterflies. Herons and backs and sailors called Jack. Take it away and don't delay. On your leg, two, your leg, three, your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his belly? But a lovely big screen for me new colour telly with me herons and heads and oven baked breads. Herons and eyes and blue butterflies, herons and backs and sailors called Jack. Herons and bellies and new colour tellies, take it away and don't delay. On your leg, to your leg, three your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his fins but a lovely little box, boys, of needles and pins, with me herons and heads and oven-baked breads. Herons and eyes and blue butterflies, herons and backs and sailors called Jack. Herons and bellies and new colour tellies, herons and fins and needles and pins, take it away and don't delay. On your leg, to your leg, three your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. And what do you think we made out of his tail but the grandest big ship, boys, and it's setting sail with me herons and heads and oven-baked breads. Herons and eyes and blue butterflies, herons and backs and sailors called Jack. Herons and bellies and new colour tellies, herons and fins and needles and pins, herons and tails and ships setting sail, take it away and don't delay. On your leg, to your leg, three your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she. Now come all ye good folk, what's inclined to be prude, the next two verses is awful rude. But I know you wouldn't like them, so I'll take them away. Take them away and don't delay. On your leg, to your leg, three your leg, throw your leg over me, Johnny, says she.
Great stuff indeed. Make of the metaphor what you will. The heron, the title of that song, without the two rude verses at the end. That is Traditional Singing from Dublin, the title of the new album by McDarry. It's out now. McDarry is embarking on a tour that includes October dates at Ongoline Teachers Club in Dublin on the 11th, the Sunflower Bar in Belfast on the 17th, Fairgreen Bar in Drogheda on the 23rd, and in November he's at the Corner Bar in Skibbereen on the 1st, plays the Cobblestone in Dublin on the 3rd, when he's bringing all of those songs back home. Theatre within theatre, or as Shakespeare might say, all the world's a stage, is the theme of this year's Wexford Festival Opera, which runs from October the 18th through until November the 2nd. The festival boasts 70 events over the 16 days, usual offering of three main stage operas and two pocket operas, one of which, Lady Gregory in America, has a libretto by Wexford native Colm Tobin. Delighted to be joined by Wexford Festival Opera's Artistic Director Rosetta Cookie on the programme this evening. You're welcome, as always, to the programme, Rosetta.
Thank you very much.
You've gone, I think, this year, because last year you were dealing with a very serious topic in and around the theme of women and war. You're bringing us into the backstage and the offstage machinations of the theatrical world in all five operas, in fact. We're getting a look backstage.
Well, after last year, that was for me a wonderful theme, very deep, very actual. Women and war was something that I think it was a duty for a festival. I needed a little bit of lightness, a little bit of light. So theatre within theatre is just that, is something that I would love to explain. Where we live, where we work, is a place that everybody should experience. I really wish that everybody could be behind the scene just before a beginning of a show, you know.
The excitement,
you know better than me. The excitement is in the air. Singer, hands sweating. Stage manager is running around trying to keep the world calm. And then just like that, a minute before the beginning, everybody meets together, hugging each other. And the fear transformed in pure electricity. And this is what the public really doesn't get. And this is what I want them to get, to take a peek, to take a look behind the scene.
We have to say, though, that particularly in some of the operas, the look that we get behind the scenes is none too complimentary in terms of the behaviour of the singers, of the critics, of the stage management, of the producers. There seems to be a terrible amount of bad behaviour going on. Let's talk a little bit about Le Convenienze et Inconvenienze Teatrali, I suppose.
You are the only one in Ireland that said perfectly this title. Yeah, well done.
From now on, I'm calling it Viva Mama, which is what most people will call it. I did spend
this
all day.
Opera, this opera had a lot of titles, from Viva la Mamma, Viva la Diva, Convenienze, etc., etc. But the real one in two acts is Le Convenienze ed Inconvenienze Teatrali. So the convenience and the theatrical inconvenience.
I think you need to explain, Rosetta, this idea of the convenienza, what they actually are, how there's a pecking order, and it is also called Viva la Diva. The diva is at the very top of that pecking order, but give us a sense of what that phrase actually means in operatic circles.
Well, when you are especially in that period, we are talking about 1831, when Donizetti wrote this opera, the convenienze ed inconvenienze were a kind of way to put the people, the singer, especially the singer, in the first role, in the second role. And these create always huge fight between the prima donna, between the seconda donna. In this case, between the mother of seconda donna, that actually is not a mother because he's a baritone, so he's a man disguised as a woman. And it's really, really funny because she wants at all costs to have his daughter, which is the seconda donna, so the second role, to be the first. And at some point, she started to sing. So it's like, you know, I don't know if you know a very famous movie in Italy, it's called Bellissima with Anna Magnani. And those kind of mothers, especially Italian mothers, that would do everything to, you know, to put her daughter on stage. Meanwhile, a poor impresario, a poor musician, composer, and a poor director of the theater are dealing with this big fight every time. They are actually supposed to put on stage an opera called Romolo and Ercilia. Which, believe it or not, there is an opera called Romolo and Ercilia by Miles Lavicek. And we found this opera and we took the overture and we put the overture in the second act as a ballet where the Mamma Agarat will dance. I don't say more than this because you have to see the dance is something amazing, amazing.
We're going to listen to one of the arias from Viva Mamma. And this is Vincente Taormino as Agatha. Is Agatha the stage mother, the pushy mother?
Yeah.
So we get a sense in this aria of he/she pushing her daughter forward.
Her daughter, yes.
And wanting the impresario to give her the best, never mind the secondo position. He wants the prima's position for her.
Exactly.
Giuseppe voglie parla, Giuseppe voglie parla. Hai pensato per Luigia? L'hai già scritto lo rondo? Attenti, casi mancano remoto, facciamo. Ci hai pensato? Io a te. Ci hai pensato? Sì o no? Si vedrà. Ci
casa in banca, sta attento, casa in banca, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, sta attento, sta attento, sta attento, sta attento, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, sta attento, casa in banca, sta attento, casa in banca, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, sta attento, sta attento, sta attento, sta attento, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, non le vuoto, faccio mo, non le vuoto, faccio mo. Anzi senti na prescia.
So there we go, a little taste of Donna Agatha Scannagalli. Is that how I would say her name, Rosetta Cookie?
Scannagalli, yes.
Now, I know that all of the names in this, all of the names of the characters in this opera have specific names. For example, I presume this is the prima donna, who is Daria Garbinati, which means, I'm told, literally, please yourself. There's another character who's called a cat castrator. There's another character whose name translates as bowel ripper. What does mommy's name translate as?
You mean Daria Garbinati?
Yes.
Daria Garbinati doesn't have a meaning, actually.
Oh, does it not?
No.
Well,
but for instance, Biscroma Strappavisere, which is the baritone, that is the musician. Biscroma is one of the notes in the, you know, in the notes that... Biscroma is in Italian the notes. Strappavisere, I really don't know how to translate. It's just to take off your stomach is something terrible.
Yeah, rip your bowels to sing this note, I think would be the roughest translation. Anyway, let us move on to Richard Brinsley Sheridan, because we're still in the world of an opera being put on stage and people being pushy and people being involved. Tell us about The Critic. This again, the libretto here is by Richard Brinsley Sheridan.
Yes. Well, I want to say something before this. All the three opera actually is going around the same theme, so to put on stage something. And this was my idea, to put the three opera quite similar as a plot, but treated in completely different three ways, both musically and dramaturgically. The Critic, you know, again, take place in a stage theater, and they needed to put on stage an opera called, a play called The Spanish Armada. Really serious. The difference between Convenienza and The Critic has inside these three wonderful actors. One is the composer, that Mr. Dangle, the librettist and impresario, Mr. Puff, that invited this strange critic called Mr. Sneer.
Yeah.
So all these three people interact a lot with the singer that are putting together the Spanish Armada.
And this, of course, is the music of Charles Villiers Stanford. So there's an Irish angle into that. How, when you're listening to the music of Stanford with your Italian ears and your Italian operatic ears, how Irish does Stanford's music sound to you?
Well, not Irish, but I have to say very well done. This opera was written in 1916, so much later than Convenienza, almost one century after Convenienza, and much later than Le Maschere. But still you feel the last tale of the Romanticism that is there. The melody is fantastic. There is the end of the first act that it's really, really amazing. So my Italian ears, when I played actually, because there are no recording of The Critic, I said, this is an opera to put on stage in Wexford. And since this year is the 100th anniversary of Stanford, I thought it was a perfect match.
Suitable time to do it. However, there is another, I'll come back to the other main stage opera in a moment, but I do want to talk briefly about Colm Tobin's libretto, which is all about Lady Gregory in America.
Yes.
And I looked down through the cast list here, as in the names of the characters, and all of the characters, or many of the characters, are Abbey actresses and activists, political activists
yes.
of
yes.
the time. How much can you tell me about the story that Colm Tobin is telling in the opera?
I mean, I tell you something. 2 years ago, Colm Tobin was here to do an opera about Harry James, if you remember.
Yes.
And we met each other. And I said, look, in 2 years, I want to do theater within theater. And he said, let me think. And then he came back to me with this autobiography of Lady Gregory's. And one chapter of the autobiography is Lady Gregory's in America. Actually, it's called, in her autobiography, it's called The Lady Gregory Playboys. So basically, it's talk about a journey to the States of Lady Gregory's and all the girls of the theater to put on stage a play. But this play is so hostaged by the American judge because they consider this a scandal. So it's all about putting on stage something and other people that will arrest them, will judge them, will put them in a trial. But it's really funny. Yeah. Really funny.
Yeah, just to give people, Molly Allgood is one of the characters. Eileen O'Doherty is one of the characters. Her sister, Myra McShuley, I think would probably be a more familiar name. And Etna McGee, all of them Abbey actresses. And indeed, that idea of scandal, interesting as well when we consider the play going on in the Abbey at the moment. Another Lady Gregory play called Gráinne, which deals with something similar in terms of how women should or shouldn't behave.
Yes, bravo,
on stage. Let's go then finally to Mascagni and Le Maschere, the masks. We're in the world of commedia dell'arte with the characters
completely.
Here, Rosetta.
Yes, completely. Mascagni wrote this opera, actually, and it was funny because he wrote this opera around 1901, something like this. And the premiere of this opera was done contemporarily in 7 theaters in Italy, in the same night. This opera talk about commedia dell'arte. Every character that are there is fully completely commedia dell'arte. I mean, Pantalone, Rosaura, Arlecchino. And again, they want to do a play. Now, let's say they interact of theater within theater is less here because there is a beginning with it's called a parabasi,
yes.
But is a prologue. This parabasi is where the ideal, the actor, which is the impresario, present to the public all the masks, every mask that will do this play. Then actually the actor disappear. And they start properly to do the three-act story.
So rather like a commedia dell'arte show itself, the plot itself becomes very convoluted with all of those plays within plays.
Bravo.
But I guess that is the nature of commedia dell'arte and the nature of what you're talking about. I just briefly want you to tell me a little bit about Puccini, Man of the Theatre. This is the second pocket opera, which has a music, a libretto and a performance by William Niall Morris. He playing the part of Puccini and having written and composed the song, the piece for to tell the story of Puccini. What story or what aspect of his life, Puccini's life, is being told here?
Well, William did a few years ago a Puccini scandal. And I saw that it was a play with music. And I thought that for the anniversary of Puccini that has been, you know, honored, especially in Italy, with every opera by Puccini that we can know, I was thinking, and I commissioned to him a kind of different nuances of the Puccini life. Not only the opera, but the Puccini life. And this is why we called Puccini Man of the Theater. And he was a man of the theater. So through the best arias possible, like El Bohème, Tosca, Madama Butterfly, and many other, we will understand what Puccini felt about the theatre.
And this, I presume, this small opera then gives us a sense of the man behind all of those operas. Lots to whet the appetite there. Rosetta Cookie, director of the Wexford Festival Opera. Thanks for being with us this evening, Rosetta.
Well, it's a pleasure.
That's Rosetta Cookie, as I say. And the Wexford Festival Opera runs in Wexford from October the 18th through until November the 2nd. Full information on the website, wexfordopera.com. Dominic Montague, the theatre maker, playwright based in Belfast. Just he has worked across stage, site-specific productions, audio drama and film, and has just finished a year's residency at the Lyric Theatre in Belfast. For his new play, Aurora, A Modern Myth, Montague has teamed up with Prime Cut Productions and for a new production of the play at the Mac Theatre as part of Belfast International Arts Festival. This new work incorporates cutting-edge animation and a specially composed soundscape to provide an immersive theatre experience. Delighted that Dominic joined us on the programme this evening. I said at the very top of the programme before 7 o'clock, Dominic, this is a play that has a tree whose roots light up. There's also a galaxy in outer space and a badger that speaks and refers to itself as an anarcho-communist. I'm taking it for granted that we're not in the world of gritty realism here.
Oh, we've left naturalism very much in the rearview mirror, I think so. We're definitely in the realm of magical realism, I would say.
And what was it that you wanted to talk about in this play that meant that this world of magic realism, and I suppose we need to know about Cass, who's the central character, and her relationship with this tree to get a sense of that?
Yeah, Cass has been a good friend to that tree since she was young, and it's been a big part of her life. I think that it's formed a real foundation in how she appreciated the sense of home and what home meant to her. The tree's been a big part of her journey from childhood into adulthood. And whenever the tree's under threat, it's that sense of the things that are important to you suddenly slipping away and being out of your control. So she decides to take matters into her own hands and to do everything she can to protect her mate, who just happens to be a tree.
So she's looking after her pal in many ways here.
I think it is a play about friendship in that regard, you know, friendship between people, but also friendship between, you know, us and the natural world as well.
Yeah, and part of the dynamic here is an actual pal, a human pal called Drew, and her brother called Con. An interesting dynamic between all three of them. In some cases, not a lot of love lost between these characters.
Yeah, I think it's that thing, you know, when you grow up with people and you're very close, and then as your lives start to go in different directions, you know, sometimes that gulf can open up. And I think with Cass and with Con, they're both dealing with grief in a different way. You know, they're both kind of dealing with the loss of their parents. And while Cass has dealt with it by slightly pushing people away, Con has dealt with it by, you know, physically running as far away as possible. So that kind of gulf opened up between them. And part of the play is how they find a way back to each other.
Yeah, so there is a very real side to the story that's been told in the play as well. But we do have the inquisitive anarcho-communist badger. Now, where did that idea come out of, and what does he allow you to do?
Well, you know, I thought, Sean, if a badger could speak, what would a badger say? And so the first thing that came to mind was it would definitely be an anarcho-communist. That's a cert. But I think it was a lot of fun within the process, you know, especially with the animation team coming on board, that I could have a character and that we as a production team could have a character that was, you know, outside of humanity, that was something else looking in.
Yes. You might explain the animation side of things, because, yes, we have three real actors on the stage and we have this very effective tree, but the animation is part of that as well. What is the animation collaboration that you have involved here that has made all of these surreal and not very magically real characters available to you?
Yeah. So it's a collaboration between Prime Cut and the University of Ulster. So about 2 years ago, there was an early draft of Aurora in existence, and the University of Ulster approached Prime Cut looking at the idea of a collaboration to look at, you know, what could the possible intersection of animation and theatre be? And we just done a reading of the show about 2 weeks before that. So they were like, no, we have this show that's really about an enchanted version of the magical world, and we're hoping to do all this quite interesting and visual stuff. So it was a really good marriage. So how it will look, Sean, is that there will be like a traditional kind of physical theatre set, which is designed by Kieran Bagnall, but integrated into that and filling the whole back wall and part of the actual stage floor as well will be all kind of a live animation projection. So the whole place will be in movement the entire time. And it means that you can, you know, you can be at a tree 1 second, and then in the next moment you can be catapulted into outer space, and then you can crash back to earth and be among the roots of a tree. So it really lets us open up that kind of visual storytelling.
Yeah, and obviously we get a sense within that that this friendship with a tree, there's all sorts of metaphors obviously that are going on there. But climate change and respect and love for the natural world is clearly an important theme here.
Yeah, I think for me, Sean, like, you know, it's that thing, you don't want to put a message onto a place. You want people to connect with it in their own way and take away what they want. But for me, somewhere, you know, very much in the heart of it is the sense of how important those moments are when we get a chance to connect with the world in some kind of, like, you know, meaningful way. And I think that, you know, God, we're all feeling it, where those chances become fewer and fewer far between. You know, it's not just having the time, it's also having the mental space to be able to take a moment in your life where you can feel that connection without, you know, the next bill or the next deadline or the next, you know, X, Y, and Z crushing in on your mental space.
The other thing that you look at, and I don't want to go into the specifics of how it happens because it's a big plot point, capitalism and those involved in capitalism is an important part of things here as well. There are mentions of Just Stop Oil and pollution of Loch Ness. What was in your mind in and around those themes?
In and around those themes, it was about, you know, at the heart of the play, it's a play about people interacting, but it's about people interacting in the world that we live in today. And those are things that, you know, are very much within our minds here and within the consciousness. So I wanted those characters to exist in the world today and to be having those conversations. Like, you know, God, the conversations that I'd be having a lot and that you hear people having a lot about, how do we exist in the world today and what the future of the world is and how do we, you know, become active participants in that? Because it can feel very overwhelming too. The world's, you know, the systems in place can seem very far away and very removed, but how do you kind of claim back power within that?
The other thing that you mention at one point along the way is the Donegal Screamers. You might some listeners will remember the Donegal Screamers, almost like a little community of their own. Had you knowledge of that community, or what brought you to them and brought them, if you like, into this play, Damien or Dominic?
I had knowledge of them. Like, I knew, I was familiar with the story. I just think I have a very soft spot for them in terms of, like, I think that Ireland kind of attracts people who are looking for a place in the world. You know, it's a sense that sometimes on the island you can feel it, we're on the edge of the Atlantic and we're on the edge of things. And I think the people can gravitate towards here when they're looking to kind of find a place in the world. So I think with the Screamers, there's something just really also satisfying about the idea that actually maybe having a scream every now and again is no bad thing, you know, for the world and for your own mental health too. Like, you know, maybe they were onto something at some point.
Do you do a bit of screaming yourself then the odd time to get rid of tension?
I do my best, Sean. I do my best. Any opportunity.
One final thing in and around the title of the play, Aurora. Well, obviously there's a reference to light there, and I've spoken about the lighting up roots of the tree. But also there's a sideways reference to gold, I think, within that as well. Maybe expand a little bit on that side of the play for us, Dominic.
Yeah, so such a fascinating thing whenever I kind of found the connection, Sean. Like, the word Aurora comes from the Latin word aurum, which is where we get the chemical symbol for gold, which is AU. And it's also the root of the word Aurora. So there's a sense of there's a nice marriage there between two kind of symbols within the play. So, like, they're both kind of ways of exploring our relationship with the world. And I thought, like, God, when I was writing this back maybe 2 years ago, I thought, what would be a really magical thing that could happen in Ireland that would really captivate us? You know, that would be really unlikely. And I thought, you know, if the Aurora appeared, that would be a big thing. And then, of course, this year, it did happen quite a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
And I think that, I feel like, you know, I was very unfortunate that I kept on missing it. But what I did find is that me and a few friends would go out. We were always a day late, but we would go out looking for it. And what you found is that there were just people gathered everywhere in the hopes of this collective moment of looking up and feeling something. So I just found it was such an inspiration for me about how, not just how it brings us together with the world, but how it brings us together with each other.
Yeah, and a sense of hope, I suppose, which is important within many of the topics that you're discussing there as well. Dominic, thanks for being with us this evening. That's playwright Dominic Montague. And Dominic's new work, Aurora, A Modern Myth, will run at the Mac Theatre from October the 24th through until November the 2nd as part of the Belfast International Arts Festival. Full details on themaclive.com. That's our lot for this Wednesday evening. Paula Shields researched. Dolly Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator. Bahari Buklis was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme produced by Kay Sheehy. Buck with you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, here on RTÉ Radio 1. And John Creedon will be with you after the news.